Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by the 5-star rated mobile puzzle game, Best Fiends. Download Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Picture it. You're out for a relaxing walk in the woods on a crisp fall day. Suddenly off in the distance, there's a rustling of the leaves. Oh, wait, that's not a deer. It's not a bird either. Don't you know what that is? I don't think anyone knows what that is. And suddenly fear kicks in, and you realize you're in the presence of an unknown creature, and it may be aware of you as well. Fight or flight drives you to run, but as soon as you get back to safety, the realization comes over you that this may be a story you cannot share with others. You want them to believe that you're sane anyway. These events and moments do happen, and today we discuss them with Ryan Edward on The Grave Talks.
It's one particular memory. I forget what age, I think maybe 6, 7, and there was a show on a History Channel called Monster Quest. And this one particular episode about a creature called a Thunderbird. And I remember sitting in my living room, like sitting in a chair, looking at the TV, and there's one particular eyewitness sighting. You see this giant bird fly over a guy, giant bird, 20-foot wingspan. The guy just looks amazed, and that just sparked something in me. Because I love dinosaurs, I loved animals, like any little kid. And when I saw that, I'm like, wow, like some of these animals are still around. Like, let me go and start investigating that. So soon enough, when I went to libraries at school, I would like get books on Bigfoot, get books on the Yeti, things like that.
I mean, and as you started to do that, I mean, obviously you got the interest there. You see something on television and, you know, it can look quite fantastical on TV. Was your attitude at the beginning, you know, like, I just want to know more. Is this real? Like, what were you thinking when you first kind of had those moments?
Because what it is that I've always been one of those people that I'm like, I'm not going to take it at face value. So I was like, okay, just because it's on TV doesn't mean it's real. So I wanted to do like my own research. I started like looking into actual researchers, not just like TV shows. I started looking into like books by authors like Bernard Hoovelman, Lauren Coleman, Carl Schurker. And I started reading these books and actually doing like eyewitness testimony. And I was like, okay, wow, like there's a lot more into this than just what you see on TV or what you hear about on maybe a podcast every once in a while. There's so much deeper into this research, into this field. Now, that's what really hooked me.
There's a lot of things, you know, when you talk about interest in paranormal, supernatural, you know, cryptozoological type things. Where is your interest lie with all those topics? Where is your passion?
Because my passion is into the cryptozoology. With me, I've always had that little eye-openness of into the paranormal because, like, ghosts, UFOs, things like that, I've always looked into, but I just haven't put a lot of research into it. Because how I see it, I'm a little bit more scientifically minded. So cryptozoology, all I see it as is zoology, but for hidden animals that are not known yet. So I put a lot of my passion, a lot of my research into that because a lot of it is based on actual science, ecology, paleontology, paleoanthropology. So I put a lot of research into that, and that's really where my passion is, because I've always loved animals, I've always loved extinct animals, things like that. And cryptozoology kind of mixes all of them together in like one big melting pot.
Sure. As you started to dig deeper into this, I mean, how did that, where did that path take you? What were some of the interesting finds that you had that really continued to feed that interest and that passion?
Because what it was finding out about certain researchers. Like, for instance, a man named Jeff Meldrum. He's one man that I really take a lot of interest in and a lot of, like, kind of set my goals for, because he's a scientist. He's scientifically minded. Mm-hmm. And when I saw his data, I saw actual patterns, actual things that would occur with living animals, which made me think, okay, these aren't just like monsters that live in the woods. These are actual living, breathing creatures that eat, that sleep, that drink water, that have to procreate. And that's what really brought my interest into it and really made my, set my path for what I do now. Because there's plenty of other researchers that go, there's a big spectrum of cryptozoology, how I see it. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of onto more to the right, the more scientist, more like physically minded, other than like more the paranormal aspects.
Sure. When we're talking about cryptozoology, I mean, the things people will think of, you know, right off the top of their head, you know, things like the Yeti, things, Goatman. I mean, there's many a things, Mothman type, you know, those kind of go more into the paranormal area of things. But I mean, explain to the audience a little bit more about, you know, what is it that that you study or others study in that field? And, you know, are we looking at things? Are we talking about things that still live on this earth? Are we talking about things that once existed that maybe were the piece of a myth, but then, you know, bones are found and it's like, well, not so much a myth anymore, maybe dead. But I mean, take us down the road and kind of explain that a little bit more.
Because what it is that when me, I have, there's several cryptids out there in this world that people hear about, or how I sometimes call them neo-cryptids, like things like the goat man, dog man, the not deer, the hide behind, rakes. All these are creatures that relatively came out recently within the mythology and folklore of modern day. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of cryptids out there that have been around for centuries, thousands of years, like the Yeti and the Sasquatch. Their stories have been in Native American and indigenous populations for centuries, for back into maybe even prehistory. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kind of look at, is the more old species. Because like, even as cryptids I know I talk about in my own book, that I know for sure are probably extinct or might be what they call a cultural memory. For instance, one cryptid a lot of people hear about now for sure is the Orang Pendek. The Orang Pendek is a small hominid seen in Indonesia. It's maybe 4 to 5 feet tall, red covered hair, human bipedal. A lot of people think of it as just a story, until on Flores they found a creature called Homo Floresiensis, a small, what they call a real life hobbit, a human species that stood about maybe 4 to 5 feet tall. Mm-hmm. That looked like almost like a modern human. So what we might be talking about with cryptids is something they call cultural memory. Maybe this culture had stories of these little hobbits, and it's kind of just fed into the modern day mythology. Mm-hmm. For instance, like with dragons, a lot of people think dragons, that their stories might come from people finding fossils of prehistoric creatures like mammoths or dinosaurs, or even maybe dinosaurs living into recorded history, but just that we never find a fossil record for them. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of more interesting part of that for the cryptozoology.
Back to our conversation in just a moment. First, I want to thank our supporter today, Best Fiends Holidays. They are upon us. And, you know, it's nice to have a reason to have a quick little escape. I'll be right back. I got to check on something. Little mental palate cleanser for you. Break out the phone. Turn on Best Fiends. It'll exercise your mind and give you a little bit of break from everything that's going on around you. If you listen to the show for a while, you know, I love this game, and it's great, especially around the holidays. I love how they update this thing all the time, too. There's new characters, there's new levels, there's new challenges, all sorts of reasons to keep you coming back. It's the perfect pick-me-up when I need a break from the holiday season. Check it out for yourself. Great storyline, collectible friends, tons of fun puzzles. It is quite possibly the best puzzle game out there. Check it out. Download it free today. Download Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. When it comes to some of those things, I mean, it's really a lot of it, would you say, you know, it's trying to get to the bottom of almost, I mean, it's not really an urban legend. It's more so legend and trying to figure out where did this start? Where do these stories, where do they originate? Where did this all come from? Was it just somebody's creative mind, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ago? Or is it based on, like you said, you know, earlier, you know, things where it was actually part of history and then kind of passed down from generation to generation?
Yes, because like what it is, that's kind of one part of cryptozoology. It's just, there's so many things mixed into it. It's like folklore, psychology, perspective, all that. Because mm-hmm. what it is trying to get down to the story, because there's plenty of, like, even to modern day, so many eyewitness stories that you want to try to get to the bottom to. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are so just so perplexing. It's like, I still, like, with cryptozoology, one thing I always say is, I don't know is a perfectly good answer, because I don't know is to a lot of these creatures, because a lot of them are so peculiar that they can't even really be a living creature. For like goat man or dog man, it just can't be like a living creature. So maybe it's more paranormal, or maybe just a story based on another creature. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like a misidentification of another cryptid, maybe like a Bigfoot or something, and people maybe see that wrong and think it's something else. Or maybe it's just folklore that has gone down through the centuries that people have the perspective of seeing like a real life animal. Like how I see it is, if you believe an animal exists, you're going to see that within your reality. Even if it doesn't really exist, you're going to see it because you expect to see it because you believe it's real. And that's kind of one thing with cryptozoology. People have to realize is that human perspective is a big thing, and stories is a big thing. Because like folklore, like urban legends, that's one thing that really goes into this research that not a lot of people account for.
That's very interesting that, you know, talk more about the idea of, you know, things where if you believe it exists, it will exist. I mean, or you know, not necessarily that it will, but give me some perspective on what that really means.
Because what it is, I kind of take, for instance, one thing a lot of people talk about is the Buddhist Tapa. If mm-hmm. you think about something hard enough, it'll become reality. Mm-hmm. I kind of think of it as, for instance, one example I'll give you is the modern day cryptid of the goat man.
Yeah.
Legend of the goat man doesn't go back that far in history. I think one of the most one of the earliest sightings were in the 60s, and that was in Fort Worth, Texas. So what it might be is, let's take, for instance, if you believe in like Bigfoot or something, and you see a creature that looks like Bigfoot, but you also believe in goat man, you might be scared or something, that you think instead of a Bigfoot, it was a goat man. Or because right now, so many people are talking about like goat man, dog man, rakes, not deer, things like that. Mm-hmm. Is that people have that in the psyche that they believe, okay, if so many people are talking about it, it has to be real. So once you think about it, it's real, when you go into the woods or you're driving on a country road at night, if you see a weird shape on the corner of your eye, you're going to think, oh, that wasn't just a deer, that was a cryptid, or that was some type of unknown animal. Mm-hmm. Rather, in reality, it's just your psyche and your perspective changing. Because with cryptozoology, it opens up your mind to a lot of mysteries. But with it, like, I'll take for instance, a lot of people say, well, you have Bigfoot on the brain. If you see anything in the woods, it's going to be Bigfoot. Which, with a lot of researchers, it's kind of true. If you believe in Bigfoot, you expect to see Bigfoot in the woods. So if you see anything that looks similar to a Bigfoot, it might be even a bear, you might take it as an unknown animal, while in reality it's not. Because you believe that unknown animal exists, so you expect it to be there, so you expect to see it, so you do see it, even if it's not there.
So when it comes to accounts that people have of these things, Would you almost say that some of the more legit ones are coming from people that have no interest in this at all, that are not, they don't have Bigfoot or Goatman on the brain? They were just, you know, out for a walk and never maybe even heard of something like Goatman, yet they witnessed something that they can't explain, but it wasn't influenced by, you know, some television show that they watched or something that they've been reading about online.
Yes, that's one thing, is that if there's so many eyewitnesses that you talk to that are like, yeah, I didn't even believe in Bigfoot, or I didn't believe in Dogman or Thunderbirds or this and this or that until I saw it. Mm-hmm. Those are the perspectives that I really take a good liking to, because with it is you wouldn't be expecting to see the creature until you see it. And if you don't believe in something, why would you see it in the woods? It's like, if you don't believe in ghosts, you're not going to look for ghosts. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to expect to see a ghost in the woods or in your house because you don't believe in it.
Sure.
So with it, it's belief is a big thing. And also, it's just also the type of observer the person is. Like if it's a hunter, or let's say someone that's an officer of the law or something, they are trained observers. So those are the people you would really want to take a looking into their sightings, due to the fact that they are trained observers. It doesn't mean if someone's just a regular Jane or Joe off the street, you don't listen to their sighting. Of course not. You still listen to their sighting.
Sure.
But with everything, you put a grain of salt with it. You don't, with me, I don't believe it completely offhand. I'm going to make sure, like, okay, like, could it be a misidentification? Could it be this? Could it be that? Because with me, I believe cryptids or paranormal, that should be the last option. That should be like, okay, nothing else. It couldn't be anything else. It has to be, okay, it has to be maybe a Bigfoot or Goatman or something. But that should be the last option, not your first option. Because then you have also, you just want to make yourself correct. Because if you go into the situation thinking this person saw Bigfoot, then of course you're going to find out that they saw Bigfoot, because you're going to point out the little facts that make it true, not the facts that don't. If that makes sense.
Sure. No, I get it. I mean, a lot of it kind of it correlates to you know, the world of ghosts and that sort of paranormal stuff too. You know, where some of the most compelling accounts are not necessarily from a ghost hunter. It's from, you know, Jane in her house that didn't believe in any of these things, but, you know, now is moving because she can't stand what the hell's going on there, and has no way of explaining exactly what's happening. Tell me about, you know, you have this passion in this area and you study it and you got a book about it. I mean, tell me, have you yourself had any sort of experiences over your life where you had a run-in with anything, you know, of this sort?
That's the one sad part about me, is that I've never really had an encounter with anything that I would say is cryptozoological. Because honestly, so far in my life, I'm fairly young. I've been more of an armchair researcher, looking at research from history or paleontology or things like that, not really going out in the field and talking to eyewitnesses. Mm-hmm. Or being out in the field, being able to see these creatures. I think the only thing that I would say is something paranormal that occurred to me is that I believe I might have seen a ghost or spirits in my house when I was younger, but that was only back when I was younger, not anytime recently.
What was that experience?
What it was is, I think it was maybe eight, and there was like a long hallway in my house that leads to my bedroom, and on the other end of the house is a kitchen, and I was walking from my kitchen and towards my bedroom, and I saw this black figure walk between like a little wall, like an opening, like a door space. Mm-hmm. Just walk by it, and then as a kid I ran by to see if there was like someone there. And there was no one there in the house, because I think it was just only like me and like two other people in the house. And I was like, okay, that's weird. I'm just going to ignore that and just go and sleep in my room. Hopefully I'll be safe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what was your reaction? I mean, when you kind of stepped away from that, you know, the next day you get up, what was your reaction?
My reaction was just like, okay, like how I see it, if you're not going to bother me, I'm okay with you. Like, I've never seen anything after that. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, if it's something that's let's just say, just traveling through. Maybe it's something that's not haunting the house or in the house for sure. Maybe it's just passing through. Maybe it's just coming by and not bothering anyone. And I kind of just, after a while, I kind of forgot about it. And so I was like, one day I was really looking back at that. And I was like, okay, I do remember seeing something weird, because I have other friends of mine that are into the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about their experiences. I'm like, yeah, I think I remember having an experience like that when I was a kid, even though I barely remembered it.
Yeah.
But recently, looking back at it, my memory gets a little bit better of it.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about some of the studies and some of the cases, some of what are they referred to? I don't want to be disrespectful to the crypto zoo animals, but are they referred to as creatures? Are they what's the way of referring to it?
Because with me, I usually just use the word cryptid.
Cryptid, okay.
An unknown animal. One thing is that I try not to do is use the word monster, which mm-hmm. a lot of people do use. Because mm-hmm. how I see it is, once you make a creature a monster, you go from a researcher into more of a hunter, or more of a, like, going in it not for science, but going in there for fun, or being able to, like, go hunt down a monster in the woods, Van Helsing style.
Sure.
Which isn't how I want to see it. I kind of see it as more research-based, scientifically based, which is what this research should be about. It shouldn't be about getting a shotgun and going into woods looking for Bigfoot. It should be about collecting data, trying to be scientifically minded with it, and not kind of this more flamboyant side that you see in this field.
Sure. Tell me about, let's kind of go into some of them specifically that you've found very interesting and that you've put time and research into. Throw one out there to begin with that you've really found fascinating in terms of what you've researched.
Gotcha. One that it's a cryptid that a lot of people talk about nowadays is a dogman. Because mm-hmm. with me, the name dogman, it's kind of, you think of it more as a cartoon character.
Sure.
Dog, like dog man. So what I call them is a bipedal canines. And with that, I've put quite a bit of research into it, because you see, especially modern day, recently, there's so many sightings. Sightings that there weren't any beforehand, historically. Like, we know about Elkhorn, Wisconsin, the Beast of Bray Road. The Upper Peninsula of Michigan, you have the Michigan Dogman. Mm-hmm. In Louisiana, you have the Rougarou. But all of a sudden, you have sightings in California, Vermont, New York, Wyoming. And you're kind of questioning, I question at least, like, okay, why are these sightings just popping off all of a sudden? Could it be because people are hearing about stories of Dogman? So it's like what I was talking about earlier, the perspective. They hear about Dogman, so they expect to see Dogman in their reality. Mm-hmm. And with me, how I see it is, Dogman's a really weird creature, because there's certain aspects of it that are paranormal, but there's certain aspects of it that are physical.
Well, let's talk about that. I want to hear when someone describes this Dogman character, what are they describing? I know it varies probably from place to place, but kind of give us the rundown on the accounts of what people are explaining that they see.
Gotcha. One, the main primary description is a creature about 7, maybe 6 to 8 feet tall. The fur color can vary from brown to black to red. They're pretty much describing like a werewolf. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen like Van Helsing or Dog Soldiers, they're describing a creature very similar to what you see in those movies. Mm-hmm. A canine head that looks like a wolf head, or to either wolf head or a Doberman's head, to even a German Shepherd, with pointy ears, a human-like torso, but with the legs, they're called digitigrade legs. They are with a hawk. They're pretty much canine legs, but walking on two. Mm-hmm. Which, with me, it's the anatomy of a bipedal canine. It's so peculiar due to the fact we don't know of anything that walks on two legs other than primates and some bird species. But at the same time, I've created kind of the hypothesis that maybe there is a little bit of a mixture of paranormal and physical with these creatures. because there's certain characteristics. For instance, eyewitnesses describe what they call as mind speak. It's as if these creatures are putting in their head, don't look at me, or they'll look away, or fear. And they say they even hear a voice in their head telling them to, like, run away or don't tell people that you saw me, which is like, okay, a physical creature can't, I'm pretty sure a physical creature cannot do that.
Sure.
That sounds something more paranormal, more astral, maybe, I don't know, ultra-dimensional, extraterrestrial, something like that. And there's even eyewitnesses that describe him just disappearing, like almost in a flashlight or a portal. But there's also sightings of creatures, of them eating roadkill off the road, or leaving footprints, or jumping over fences, or drinking water, which, in my opinion, I don't believe a astral being would need to do that. But then again, I don't know. It's a really good statement within this piece, because I really don't know, because it's such a mysterious creature.
Sure.
And what I believe, it's a possibility that maybe a canine has evolved to walk on two legs. Because there's also another researcher that's put a lot of work into this named Linda Godfrey. Mm-hmm. She believes also that maybe canines became bipedal. Because if you look at the fossil record, canines first evolved in North America during the Eocene, several million years ago. So it's a possibility there's an offshoot somewhere in prehistory that maybe due to the environment, it helped them being on two legs. Maybe they were able to see farther, or maybe even have forward-facing, the front paws turn into more hands. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people describe the front paws as not paws, but as hands, almost like a raccoon. You hear a lot of people say, describing it as almost like a raccoon's hand. It's not exactly human, but it's not a paw either. So with Dogman, you might have that maybe it is a physical creature, but also at the same time, maybe there are certain aspects that are paranormal of it.
Sure. It's very, you know, curious, especially when you do kind of get into those scenes of it's eating roadkill or drinking water. I guess, you know, how do you connect some of those dots where these things being out there and they're just seen so mysteriously rarely that there isn't more evidence, that more people haven't caught any of these things on camera, especially today where everybody's got a camera in their pocket, a high definition camera in their pocket. And yet when someone does kind of come across these things, still, you know, the most we usually get is some sort of weird, grainy, questionable footage that we go, I'm not quite sure. Why is it that we have yet to get any of these things in more of a definitive, you know, visually capture them in some way, shape or form?
Yes, that's one thing that a lot of people do bring up, because like everyone has, yeah, as you said, has cameras in their pockets, or a lot of people have cameras on their property or even trail cameras. Mm-hmm. And one example I'll give, for instance, is the most famous cryptid out there is Sasquatch. And I'll give you evidence for that one of why they might not be seen on trail cameras.
Yeah.
Or be seen on cameras in the first place, is because there was a recent study, I believe in 2010, in Africa with great apes. And it's shown that great apes, the known great apes, realize when trail cameras are there and they purposefully avoid them. For instance, chimpanzees or gorillas, what they would do is they might be seen for an instance, but then they realize the camera's there, so they move out of its perspective. What they call a camera is something called a novel stimuli. And the research was on how great apes would react to novel stimuli. And we can clearly tell that they react to it. Especially, one thing they correlated to was group size. If it's a large group of primates, they will be more bold, emboldened. They will maybe get closer to the camera, maybe tap it, maybe move it. But a lone animal, you would never see that, because that lone animal would be less emboldened, so they would avoid that camera. And with Sasquatch, we believe they are lone animals, or maybe even in small groups. And if a known great ape would, even they have high intelligence, but they don't have human-like intelligence, can avoid a camera, what kind of great ape that has the intelligence of almost a human do? If they know that trail cameras there, they're going to avoid it. And if I believe especially with Bigfoot, is that they have almost human-like intelligence, but that their intelligence is not where we put it. We put our intelligence into tool making, culture, mathematics, science, history. These creatures don't do that. Maybe they put their brain cells and their neurons into hiding, into evasion, into knowing their environment. So when people try to go looking for these creatures, it's like you're going into their backyard. They're going to be able to hide from you. And if you put like a trail camera up, or if you're walking through, it's almost as if someone moves something in your house. If someone even moves something on your shelf, you're probably going to realize it, because it's your house. You know the, you know its environment. So with a Sasquatch walking through the woods or putting up a trail camera, then yeah, they're going to realize you're there, and they're going to either avoid you or maybe even watch you from a distance, and then you never even realize they're there. Mm-hmm. So with that, is that's the possibility of why a lot of these creatures are not seen on camera, is due to the fact that they are so intelligent that they can avoid that. They can avoid you. And also at the same time, a lot of people, there's plenty of eyewitnesses I've spoken to and I've heard from, that they're like, yes, I had a phone in my pocket, or I had a camera even around my neck, but I never even thought about it because of that fear. Yeah. Fear kicks in. Mm-hmm. And once fear kicks in, you kind of, all things go out the window. It's like what they say, fight or flight.
Yeah.
The biggest thing is freeze. Humans, when we get scared, a lot of us freeze in that situation. So if you did have, let's just say, a iPhone 12 in your pocket, you're not going to realize it because you're scared of the giant animal in front of you, so you're not going to take that picture. And that's a possibility of why you don't have a lot of that visual evidence in this field.
Now, when one of these things, as humans, we look at this going, well, you're avoiding it because it's a camera, but it's really not that. I don't think the creatures know it's a camera. Is it more so because they're so hypersensitive to their environments and what, you know, what is made up of nature, that they see something like that and they go, that's not a leaf, that's not part of a tree, that's not, you know, part of nature? Is it just because it's a foreign object and they don't know what it is or what it's capable of, and that's what creates the avoidance? Not necessarily them going, oh, they're gonna catch me on film. It's just foreign object, not natural, you know, be scared. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I believe it is like the foreign, it's a foreign object, so they would be wary of it. Because even think about humans. A lot of times if you're at a bank or something, or you hear plenty of stories of like banks or post offices, if it's a strange box there, they call it a bomb squad or something. Because sure, you don't know what it is, you're going to think the worst. Mm-hmm. It's probably the same thing with these creatures. And also, when you have like a camera physically on you and you point it towards them, how I see it is that they might correlate that with maybe a gun. Because there's plenty of times when people say, like, I'm pretty sure these creatures know what a gun is, because if they've seen hunters, if they watch hunters, if they know that, then they would know that weapon is a weapon and it can kill. Mm-hmm. So when they see you raise up a camera, they might correlate that to a weapon and skedaddle or avoid you due to the fact that they assume you're going to be there to hunt them, you're there to hurt them. Due mm-hmm. to the fact that all animals think like that. Most animals, and even humans, believe, okay, everything's a threat. If you're strange, you're a threat. You're not here to research me. You're here to hunt me. You're here to hurt or anything like that. So it's a possibility that these animals correlate that in their brains of camera equals something foreign, camera equals something dangerous.
Right, yeah.
Avoid.
Sure. And that makes more sense. That wraps up part one of our conversation with Ryan Edwards. In part two, has there ever been convincing evidence of a habitat or home for any of these creatures? How much do supernatural forces play into the world of cryptozoology? What kind of corpses have been found that leads one to believe that some of these things actually exist? Does Ryan believe that some of these creatures have supernatural powers? And would society even accept the existence of these creatures, even if there was hard evidence for its existence? All that and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up to be one at patreon.com/thegravetalks, or go to thegravetalks.com and click become a Gravekeeper. Your support is what keeps us on the air. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.